Honey, the power's out.
Flashlight's dead. Can't find batteries.
Hey, neighbors. Want to borrow my Star Patrol spotlight?
That flashlight lights up the whole house.
Watch. The Star Patrol can light up the whole neighborhood. It can illuminate up to a half mile away.
A half mile? That's insanely bright.
And the Turbo Boost increases brightness up to 100%.
Whoa, now that's insanely bright.
With 10 illumination modes, the Star Patrol is a flashlight, spotlight, floodlight, emergency light, and more. And with an ultra-fast USB power bank, you can even charge your phone with it. Plus, the Star Patrol is fully rechargeable and backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee.
So how do I get one of these Star Patrols?
Go to GetStarPatrol.com and you'll get it with free Turbo Boost, free shipping, and a money-back guarantee. Again, that's GetStarPatrol.com. GetStarPatrol.com.
America bombs a terrorist group that has disrupted the global economy. That's the headline. But the backstory here matters. I'm Jenna, and this is Smarter News. The Trump administration has moved quickly and engaged countries all over the world, but remarkably absent from the regular cadence of news coming from this administration is more of a mention of Iran. Iran is a country the U.S. government has designated a state sponsor of terrorism because the U.S. believes that Iran supports foreign terrorist organizations like Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis based in Yemen. And that matters because just this weekend, America bombed Houthi targets in Yemen, arguing that the Houthis continue to attack both military and commercial ships that need to freely sail through the area around Yemen. Now, the Houthis have done this since the war between Israel and Hamas began in a show of solidarity with Hamas. And the timing of this operation by the United States matters for a few different reasons, particularly because it comes after President Trump reportedly wrote a letter to Iran's supreme leader asking for an opening of dialogue, of negotiations. And the supreme leader publicly rejected this. Keep that in mind, because at the end of the president's announcement this weekend about targeting the Houthis, the Iran-backed group, he said this, quote, "Every shot fired by the Houthis will be looked upon from this point forward as being a shot fired from the weapons and leadership of Iran, and Iran will be held responsible and suffer the consequences, and those consequences will be dire." Now, up until this point, I was curious as to why the administration wasn't more vocal on Iran, and I felt like it was sort of missing from the conversation because so many of our stories connect back to Iran, whether we're talking about Israel and Hamas in Gaza, we're talking about Hezbollah in Lebanon, even when we're talking about Russia or Syria, there's an angle to those stories that include Iran. And so I felt like it was missing from the conversation. So I proactively interviewed one of the leading voices on Iran-U.S. policy, Mark Dubowitz. He's the president of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, a nonpartisan nonprofit based in Washington, D.C. And this is our conversation. You know, Mark, after so many years of knowing each other, which I don't want to say out loud at this point, because it feels like a long time that we've known each other, talked a lot about what's going on in the Middle East. You've been such a generous resource when it comes to news and analysis that's been so helpful to me in my reporting career and to so much of my audience. How did you get interested in the Middle East, and how did you first start to get really curious about Iran?
First of all, Jenna, great to see you again. Great to be on. I was always curious, even as a kid. I grew up in South Africa, moved to Canada, always a little obsessed with the Middle East. Old enough to remember like the 73 war, the Yom Kippur war. Ended up going to college, part of my college studies in Israel, and then lived in Israel in 1996 during a wave of Iran-backed suicide bombings. My wife just narrowly avoided one of those suicide bombings. So always obsessed with the Middle East and obsessed with Iran, because Iran was doing everything they could to literally and figuratively blow up the peace process between Israelis and Palestinians in the 1990s. Came to Washington in 2003 after 9/11 and immediately understood that the real threat in the region was not Iraq or even Afghanistan. The real threat in the region was emanating from the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Why was that so obvious to you?
I think it was just because of my background. I mean, I understood that, you know, the Ayatollah and the mullahs in Iran, they had an expansionist revolutionary agenda, and the Islamic Republic depended on that expansionism and the support for these terror proxies in the region, right? These proxies like Hezbollah and Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, And they'd also killed and maimed American soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, they had supported these terror proxies to kill and maim our troops. And that I saw immediately. And obviously that became more apparent during the years of the Iraq War and the war in Afghanistan. And so for me, that was the source of all the problems of the Middle East. And I committed myself not only to stopping the nuclear weapons program in Iran, which would make them even more dangerous, but to really bringing down the Islamic Republic, which is the only guarantee of peace and stability in the Middle East.
Is that a possibility now?
I think it is. I mean, the regime is very weak after the Israelis have really eviscerated this ring of fire that Khamenei and the IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, had built around Israel. And then in April and most particularly in October, Israeli airplanes bombed Iran's and blew up Iran's strategic air defenses, took out its bulk of its ballistic missile protection capability. And so the Ayatollah is, in a sense, naked. Not a great image for your listeners, but great opportunity now to marry American and Israeli power with the Iranian people, the majority of whom despise this regime and have been on the streets, millions of them on the streets since 2009, yelling death to the dictator. America, are you with us or are you with the dictator?
You know, it's been interesting to watch the first few weeks of this administration, because we've talked about a lot of different topics, but we haven't really talked about Iran. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you about this, because I noticed in the president's address to Congress, he covered a lot of ground, you know, 90 plus minutes of talking, but he did not mention Iran. And I had to think that's strategic for a reason. And then in the days that followed, he made a reference to reaching out to the Ayatollah or reaching out to the leadership. We don't have a lot of specifics, at least at this time of this recording, saying that he wanted to negotiate. You know, what do you make of that? You've seen a few different administrations with very different postures. You believe that having the right sort of relationship with Iran is important to American security. You know, what do you make of how the Trump administration is approaching this particular part of the world?
Look, I think it's very important that that America has the right relationship with the Iranian people. But I worry again that President Trump may make the same mistake that Barack Obama and Joe Biden made, which was to reach out to the Ayatollah and the regime without supporting the people. Now, I think President Trump has made it very clear he wants some kind of deal with the mullahs to stop their nuclear weapons program. I think that's right. We need to stop it, but we need to fully dismantle it. This can't be another Obama 2015 deal where we put temporary restrictions on the regime, and then we give them hundreds of billions of dollars of sanctions relief, and we sort of kick the nuclear can down the road. If President Trump's serious about dismantling the program, and he wants to do it through diplomacy and not through military action, then the regime needs to fear American power, and they need to fear Israeli power. And that's the only way that the regime will give up its nuclear program. Otherwise, this will just be another negotiation, another Iranian rope-a-dope to pull another American president into diplomacy. It doesn't solve the problem, and ultimately, as I said, just delays and defers it.
Is there anything in your research that suggests that the billions of dollars in sanction relief that was provided to Iran over the last several years directly help fund the terrorist attack on Israel, directly funds Hezbollah, directly funds the Houthis? Is there a connection there that we can make for our audience about how those decisions in Washington, D.C. then surface in other ways?
Well, absolutely. I mean, money's fungible, so it may not be the same dollar, but it's the same dollars, right? And essentially that money is going into the Iranian coffers. They have the choice between spending that money on guns for terrorists or butter for their people, and that sort of proverbial guns and butter decision that all governments have to make. And when they're flush with funds and they've got billions of dollars flowing into those coffers, then they can have the resources to fund Hezbollah and Hamas and Iraqi Shiite militias and the Houthis in Yemen, build ballistic missiles, expand their nuclear weapons program, expand, by the way, their intercontinental ballistic missile program, the ICBMs that they're building to target America. When they don't have that money and they're barely keeping the lights on, it's very difficult for them to fund this proxy network. And so I think under Obama and under Biden, they've had this money. President Trump took away a lot of that money during his first term. I think hopefully he's now in the position he's going to reimpose this maximum pressure sanctions campaign, and really drain the regime of its resources.
To be fair, I've known you a long time, and you haven't been that complimentary about any American administration, Democrat or Republican, and how they've handled Iran, that you've been frustrated, right, with the American government on that. Talk to us about that, Mark. What do you think just Americans in general are not seeing when it comes to Iran? And what's the stakes of getting this wrong, of not engaging in the way that you believe will be the most effective?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Trump administration first term had basically the right policy. I mean, it was a policy of real maximum pressure. I think they kind of ran out of time to really fully implement it. And they didn't marry it with a policy of maximum support for the Iranian people. I think that is the right combination. You've got to marry pressure with support for the people, because ultimately, at the end of the day, this problem is only going to be solved by the Iranian people, right? The millions who despise this regime and are looking for external support. But we got to get it right, because this is a brutal, repressive dictatorship that it has caused the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people throughout the Middle East, has, you know, murdered, raped, and tortured Iranian women and men, launched chemical attacks against Iranian schoolgirls in order to break the back of the protests, the Women Life Freedom protests, where Iranian women were on the streets in 2022, 2023, protesting against the gender apartheid that they suffer under. So a brutal regime, a dangerous regime. Lots of brutal regimes in the world. Jenna, we can't go after all of them, right? But we certainly can go after those that are going to represent a significant threat to American national security. And this regime is building nuclear-tipped intercontinental ballistic missiles with only one address, and that's the United States of America. So we got to get it right. We luckily have an ally that is fighting and dying in its own defense, and that's Israel, that's done significant damage to the regime and its proxies. And I think it's incumbent upon us, if we don't want to do the fighting ourselves, and there's reasons not to, that we provide the Israelis with everything they need in terms of potent material support and political support so that they can take the fight to our one of our biggest enemies.
This is a little bit unrelated, but related. Are you concerned at all? You know, we've seen a lot of funding cuts for the government, and sometimes the money and the aid that can go to helping groups that are helping the Iranian people comes in different forms. Under the cover of darkness a little bit of, you know, aid going to one thing, but we're really helping to support. This is a soft power that people are talking about at times. Are you concerned about some of the government funding slashes when it comes to foreign aid and how that could affect being able to actually help the Iranian people?
I am concerned. Yeah, I mean, there's some really good places in town. I mean, we don't take government, you know, take government money for this work, but there are others who do. And the National Endowment for Democracy, for example, and it's two institutes, one Democratic, one Republican, and I think have done really good work with the Iranian opposition on human rights issues over the years. And seeing that funding ending, I think, is an own goal for American policy. I mean, a lot of money wasted, a lot of money that went through USAID that was squandered. But let's not, you know, get rid of everything. Let's take a scalpel, not a chainsaw, to this and really retain the money that is helping support Iranian women and Iranian human rights issues and democracy building. I mean, I think this is smart money. And by the way, it's pennies on the dollar compared to what we would have to spend if we're engaged in a military confrontation with the Islamic Republic.
It's been sometimes a hesitancy by the American government to talk about regime change. I know that you're talking about that though, right, Mark? Like, you're talking about a change in regime when it comes to Iran. Who would lead Iran if the current power structure is not in place?
Yeah, Jenna, it's a good point. I mean, I don't use the phrase regime change, because when I do, like, people's brains freeze, right? They think about 500,000 mechanized troops invading Iran. No one's talking about that. No one's talking about Iraq and Afghanistan all over again. People are talking about supporting people on the ground in Iran in the way that Ronald Reagan supported anti-Soviet dissidents during the Cold War. I mean, Reagan's brilliance was that he understood that the Soviet Union was ideologically bankrupt, economically bankrupt. The Red Army was stretched around the world. And even though they had thousands of nuclear-tipped missiles and ICBMs already aimed at our cities, Reagan understood that he could put a huge amount of pressure economically on the Soviet Union, put pressure politically, use the bully pulpit, but also support anti-Soviet dissidents who were behind the Iron Curtain, right, in all through the Soviet Union. Vaclav Havel and Lech Walesa and Natan Sharansky, I mean, and Andrei Sakharov, these were the people who were famous back in, you know, the Cold War. I remember those days. And these were people who were getting support from Ronald Reagan. And that support for anti-Soviet dissidents was a necessary part of the strategy that ultimately collapsed the Soviet Union. This can be done again against the Islamic Republic. And again, we don't have to, quote, fire a shot. We don't have to send 500,000 mechanized troops into Iran. We have to support the people. So I don't use the phrase regime change. I use, you know, weakening the regime, undermining the regime. And I think if history smiles on us the way it smiled on Reagan with respect to the Soviet Union, then the Iranian people can topple their own regime. And whatever comes next will be better than the brutal mullahs that currently rule that country.
Yeah, that's certainly the hope. It would be wild to think about that, to think about like our children, Mark, being able to travel to Iran, you know, to be able to spend time in the country. It's been so close to us for so many decades now. Okay, quick final question. I know you're launching a special project that you're going to be talking more in depth about Iran. So that people want to learn a little bit more, really step by step, you're going to map it out for them. I'm grateful to welcome you to this podcast space, Mark. As you're coming into the pool, Mark. Here it is. Everyone's here. We're ready for you. Talk to us a little bit about this series that you're launching.
Yeah, thanks, Jen. I'm finally taking the pledge into the podcast space. And I'm launching something called the Iran Breakdown, where we are going to break it down. I think 2025 is going to be a big year for Iran. I'm going to do a limited series, 10 parts, great Iran experts. We're going to cover the full spectrum of issues with respect to Iran, obviously geopolitics, nuclear, missiles, but also the Iranian people, Iranian culture, some music. I mean, it's a fascinating country. And I hope to God, yes, one day that we all get to go and celebrate in a free Tehran. In the meantime, I'll have this podcast launching March 19th. So hope folks will listen.
Yeah, I love that. I didn't know that you were going to include that culture piece, which is so important to be able to just like learn a little bit more about as part of the world that, you know, so few of us have been able to go. Well, Mark, I've trusted your analysis, your counsel many times when it comes to the Middle East. I really appreciate you and the work that FDD is doing constantly around the world. So thank you for the time again and look forward to seeing you soon.
Thanks so much, Jenna. Really appreciate it.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.